Hello again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 246 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew with you, as always. With me this week is Ben, also known as Arcane.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back.
Back on the show. Been under the weather last week, Ben.
Yeah. Just a weird bout of migraines, and then later on, shortly after, around the time of missing the podcast, I found out some news about a family member, which wasn't too good, so it was just a rough week with regards to those two things, so
not a good situation, but things looking a little bit better this week, and Kenny was able to step in, and of course we do hope to have the three-man booth whenever we can, but nevertheless, the two of us are here to talk about our favorite subjects, basketball, video games, and basketball. Well, two of our favorite subjects anyway. That's not Fallout and Fortnite. I mean, that's a different show altogether, I suppose, but we are back to talk about the latest news and what we've been doing on the virtual hardwood, as always. This is, as we've said before, the kind of period between the heat of playing the games, whether they're fresh and new, and when the new games are coming out. So news is a bit sporadic. Sometimes we get an announcement like NBA Playgrounds 2 has been announced, as we discussed last week, and there's a couple of other news items of note, but it comes and goes, doesn't it, Ben, at this time of the year? But sometimes we have a lot to talk about with the news, and other times we're just waiting for the previous season to start.
Yeah, it has that awkward moments where it's like, so do you like stuff sort of moments.
It is the lull. Of course, we do have the NBA playoffs to talk about, but as far as the games go, the news is, again, sporadic, but we do have a couple of interesting things to talk about this week. Starting out with some updates for NBA Live 18. Now, we've talked about the updates for NBA Live 18 before, and that we've talked about how they need to be a little bit better. We'd like to see a little bit more content come through, rosters being a bit more frequent. Of course, a new roster update came out on, I guess, Friday our time. It was nice to see after 3 weeks without a roster update. It was noted that they finally updated the Phoenix Suns coach to the interim Jay Triano. That of course, Earl Watson was fired very early in the season, so it's very late to get around to replacing him. So there's things like that where EA could definitely be doing a little bit more with the roster updates to get them. I mean, we can do a lot more now that we've got our own roster editing functions in the game since they put those in with patch 108. Of course, we can't share those roster updates, but when it comes to things like replacing coaches and everything, you do want to see that happen a little bit more, well, certainly earlier and more frequently, so that the game is really kept up to date, because 2K, although it has some issues with its roster updates, does do that a little bit better right now.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand in terms of, it's a little bit trickier getting a coach as opposed to a player in that, but still, yeah, I think definitely it's a thing that could be a little bit quicker, I mean, given how early in the year it happened. So hopefully, in the years to come, that things like that are a little bit speedier in process in terms of getting the fix or getting those adjustments and changes in. So
it is something they need to work on a little bit more. Also, expanded content for Ultimate Team, and of course the One and other modes like that, and the live events, which they do. I think most of the updates have really been with live events, or most of the dynamic content this year. Certainly a lot of stuff has been added to Ultimate Team, but there's a little bit of controversy I'm seeing on Twitter at the moment among the NBA Live community, at least. It's not really widespread, I suppose. It's not like your Battlefront 2 or anything kind of controversy like that, but a little bit of unrest within the NBA Live basketball gaming community about the Ultimate Team content, because they have added some new Masters challenges to Ultimate Team in the past week or so, and of course the other weekly challenges are coming through, which is great, but it's been noted that the requirements for entering the Masters challenges, they usually need the Eastern and Western Conference heroes, and you need to get other cards and finish other challenges to even attempt those challenges in the first place, kind of like some of the things you have to do with my team as well, having to have the entry requirements of having certain cards in your collection. Those haven't really been there for the new challenges, the new Masters challenges, and some people are understandably a bit upset because they've ground through all the challenges and completed them and got all the cards, and now the new ones are more open, so it feels like they've had to do all that work, and now it's sort of for nothing in a sense. So there's a bit of unrest there.
I don't know. That's a shame. I mean, maybe they got some feedback, you know, in terms of it sort of being too restrictive in that. So maybe they're trying to find a balance and that, you know, sort of see what's working. And, you know, obviously this would be in the process for Live 19 and that. So it's maybe trying to find, what works best for these kind of things.
I mean, that was my thought as well, because you look at something like, again, NBA 2K18 being the obvious parallel here. We've talked before about how difficult it is to start a new player for my career and the connected online modes. It's a little bit off-putting to a late adopter, and Kenny and I talked about this last week with Kenny mentioning that he's at times thought about picking up NBA 2K18 on sale and joining us for some games, missing the camaraderie and the fun that we sometimes have, at least with 2K Pro-Am. But having to grind and do everything this late in the game, if you're a late adopter, that's tough. And with Live, there has been a lot of late adopters, so I guess it's opening up more for them. So I do understand the frustration and not liking the idea that, I did all this work and played hard and did all this work to get the cards and to go through those early challenges, and now it feels like it's just either lazy or too easy or whatever. But I think it's good for late adopters, and at this point, just an opportunity to flesh out your collection a little bit. I can see both sides of it, basically, and I understand the frustration, but I also think it's got merit.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, if it is, you know, building towards trying to find a balance system for next year, or, you know, like the thing that you suggested with regards to new adopters and that, I think, or late adopters, I suppose is more the term you use, then it makes sense, you know, and maybe it is going to be potentially like the little live events challenges, like how they have different modes, how it's like first to 5 or first to 7 or first to 11 or 21. So they might have some slight variations in how they go about it and that sort of thing, you know, just to sort of change it up every, you know, so it's not too repetitive in that sort of sense. Or so I don't know, that might be another possibility in that sort of sense. I guess we'll know more over the coming weeks when, you know, if the next lot of challenges come in, whether it's going to be a similar or different thing again. So I think this might be a potentially another thing where we wait and see what they're going to do. You know, maybe it's something that the community manager could communicate, you know, that we're doing this for, you know, potentially this reason and stuff like that. Or, you know, might be something that, yeah, might be worth communicating in that sort of sense, just so people, you know, just get a better understanding what was the purpose of it in that sort of sense, and so that way they can't be bitter or with, you know, what you were suggesting, that people are sort of unhappy that, you know, they've done all this work and now it's just sort of too easy in that sort of sense, or too open of a.
And the other thing is that people are saying, oh, it's a slap in the face to grinders and things like that. And again, I understand where they're coming from, but it's not like these challenges, these new challenges that are easier and have lower requirements, it's not like they're not open to the people who have been grinding. If anything, it's kind of a reward. It's like, yes, you've been grinding hard and finishing these challenges. Here are some other ones that you can get some easier cards from. You know, everyone can benefit from these new challenges. So it's not just the, and also the old challenges that still have the requirements are still there as well. It's not like they've been changed or patched out of the game or removed. So if people want to go and do those old grindy challenges, they've still got to go and do the grind if they want to go back and do those old master challenges. These newer ones are available to everyone. So again, it's I understand, but at the same time, I think it's everyone can benefit from it. And as you said, it's an experiment to see what the best option is, whether they felt the old ones were too restrictive, so they're trying these new ones, seeing what's more popular. I think maybe some people are taking it a little bit too personally, and we've seen that a lot in the basketball gaming community over the years, whether it's EA's decision not to release on PC, which we all, you know, we want to see that return to the PC platform for NBA Live, but some people do take it very personally, and it's not a personal thing. There's reasons why people make these decisions, why the company makes these decisions, I should say. And yeah, I think maybe people do take it too personally.
I just had another thought. When did this new challenge come in, since it's been easier or more open in that sort of sense?
In the past week or so, they've added the new master challenges.
Okay. Possibility. This is sort of left field one. With regards to some European countries and stuff, voting in on the whole loot box sort of thing, maybe EA playing it safe in that sort of sense, so to avoid that gambling element, to make sure they don't,
be the cards that you need for the challenges you actually do have to earn through playing challenges. They don't come in packs, so there's no sort of odds. Like if you finish the challenges to get it. That could also be the whole idea of it, making it a little bit more accessible. That makes sense.
And maybe playing it safe just to avoid any legal issues and stuff like that, depending on which countries and how strict these new laws upon, and maybe waiting upon further, legal verification of it. So, I don't know, that was a thought that just came to mind. Since it's been about that time when those laws have come into play. I think maybe it is potentially a safe bet in terms of that thing, just to not to get into any legal trouble with regards to these new terms and stuff.
And I suppose at the end of the day, it just comes down to consistency, the fact that they have done this before and now they're changing it. But as you said, they could be trying new things, whether it's to avoid any potential problems with the new restrictions on loot boxes and gambling and things like that, with which Ultimate Team could be seen as, or whether they're simply just opening it up to everyone, making it a bit easier this time of year. And again, everyone can take it, so even if you've been doing that hard grind earlier on, now you've got some ones that are easier and they're accessible and open to everyone. So I do get the point, but at the same time, it's, I don't think it's something to take too personally. And people have talked about EA giving away too much with Live, whether it's the in-game content or even giving away the game for really low prices. But the big thing is that they want people playing Live and getting back into Live, and they want it to be accessible. So I think ultimately it is a good move. Maybe they need to approach it a little bit better so as to not alienate some of the hardcore grinders and the hardcore supporters. But I think what they've done with Live this year has been very successful. I mean, people are looking at a lot of the physical sales and they're not as good, but digitally, Live has done very well. So I think it has been an overall successful year for NBA Live 18, which is good news moving forward to Live 19. And if they are working out a few things as far as what to do, what's the best way, what's the most user-friendly way, the best, has the most goodwill, all things like that, that's so much the better. They need to, obviously, it also needs to come through on the gameplay and the game modes and everything, but the approach to the product that you're giving consumers as far as goodwill and everything, as we've seen from 2K18, so important.
And because I wasn't on last week's show, and you guys would have obviously talked about the surveys that are going out to players that haven't played 2K18 in a while, with one of the questions relating to the survey, did you start playing Live 18 instead, sort of stuff. It's obviously put enough of a, there's been enough sort of change what's the angle I'm going for with this phrase?
Well, I suppose
there's been enough of a shift.
There's a trend, a shift in the trends that the people are actually playing Live 18,
Yeah, and that, it's got 2K asking the question is, has the community shifted towards playing this game more? And, if there would be a follow-up question, what is it about that sort of mode playing that did you like compared to what we've offered this year and sort of thing? So maybe there is some concerns in... with 2K being, I don't want to say absolutely worried, but wanting to find out what the people want, and or you know why they have migrated away from their game as such. So yeah, I think Live has done enough to sort of rattle the tree a bit, I suppose, would be the phrase I'm looking for in this.
Sure. And it is important that you focus on what the community is saying, what they're doing, even with Live success, and the fact that they do appear to be on the right path. You do need to listen to what we're all saying, which they're obviously still doing, and even with how successful 2K has been, especially with given the backlash this year, combined with how successful it's been with sales, it still shows that you need to listen to the community and to make the best game possible. Because there have been those negative reviews, and they haven't all been centered around microtransactions and everything. People have actually talked about being disappointed with the gameplay itself or aspects of the modes, which we have as well. And to that end, obviously, 2K, you know, people have been saying that 2K don't care, and it's easy to get cynical like that. But as it happens, we have seen a situation where at least one developer and the main gameplay designer, of course, Mike Wang, Baluba, has been actively soliciting feedback on Twitter. And this transitions into our next topic this week, which is about getting this feedback that Baluba has been asking for. And he's doing it through social media, through his Twitter, at Baluba on Twitter, and posting polls asking what people, what they prefer as far as the gameplay. And first of all, I actually really like to... I really like that he's doing this, basically, because it's a really effective way of getting some quick feedback on some key areas of gameplay, and it really suggests to me that they are looking to make these little tweaks.
I'm hoping so. I don't know. There's, given how much I'll speak in my own turn, how much of a step back I think 2K18 was in terms of a lot of areas. I think, and I hope that they do take the feedback and stuff like that, and, you know, and do make their game great again. And I mean, I know there's a whole sort of campaign, and I hate using that sort of Trump slogan in that sort of sense, but it did take a really large step backwards this year in terms of things. I know they were really focusing on the whole 2K League stuff. But yeah, just didn't have that polish this year, and it wasn't enjoyable. And then that whole VC grind this year was just too much. So I really hope they do listen. And whether it's, you know, just stuff for face value, just to appear, is I guess for me a wait and see and that sort of thing. I think 2K19 for me, if I am going to get it, is definitely a wait and see. It's not going to be day one purchase, that's for sure at this point.
And it's going to come down to what the higher ups in the company are going to determine. Obviously, microtransactions aren't going anywhere, so the key is going to be designing the game that does have microtransactions, yes, but not as intrusive, not pushing it as hard as it did in 2K18 as a blatant cash grab. Finding ways to actually have that system in the game, because again, not going anywhere, but to have it in there so that it doesn't detract from the experience, which was a big problem with 2K18, as we've said on so many occasions and so many people have said. So we're not.
And what we'd actually been, you know, warning the last 3-4 years.
Certainly, we have. It has been a fear. We've seen those fears come to fruition, sadly, with 2K18. But so, I mean, that's going to be a big challenge for them to do as developers, is to get the game. The game they want, while also appeasing the higher ups who are saying, "Let's make some money off this recurrent revenue strategies." But as far as Mike is concerned, he's put out these polls on Twitter, including well, let's start with the first one. The first two are about a week apart. The second one's got a day left, so you know, 7 or 8 days apart. The first one is about pro stick orientation. What do you prefer? And this is basically between absolute and camera relative. Now, I prefer Absolute. I think everyone on the Pro-Am squad actually plays with Absolute, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually wrote an article about this a couple of weeks ago for Monday Tip-Off, saying, I said Absolute controls are absolutely best, and I really have never understood the appeal of camera relative controls. Now, the interesting aspect of this poll is that Absolute won with 76% of the vote. Now, that surprised me because camera relative is the default. So that is suggesting that, I mean, that's only 76% of about 10,000 people who voted in the poll. So it's not necessarily representative of all 8 million people who play NBA 2K18. Or whatever, the 8 million copies sold, something like that. So let's say all the people who play 2K18, that's a very small sample size. But I was still interested to see that, because I would have thought Camera Relative would have been much more popular, being the default, and something that a lot of long-time 2K gamers are perhaps more used to. I mean, if you're coming from Live, as we did for so many years, the Absolute approach is basically what Live has always done. So that's why it appeals to me more. I also think it's more... I think it's less contrived, I think it's more logical, but... It does suggest that it's a lot more people than I thought. I thought maybe I'd be, maybe it'd be closer to 50-50. Maybe Absolute might even be in the minority. But at least for the 10,000 people who participated in that poll that Beluga posted, Absolute controls were absolutely far and away the most popular option. And with that in mind, if they're looking to make small adjustments there to maybe make Absolute the default setting, I mean, this is a good way of getting gauging feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised with the result as well. I did think it was going to be closer as well. Like definitely not a blowout answer in terms of response. At best, you know, if one was to be the more dominant, I thought it would be like 60-40 in terms of percentage. But the fact that, it was 77%.
Yeah, 76% Absolute, 15 camera relative, 9 don't use it. So there are people who just ignore the stick. Although that's pretty. The fact that the people aren't even using it for dribbling moves, that's kind of weird, because that's really the only. If you're not performing manual dribbling moves, I don't think you're doing very well at 2K. To be honest,
yeah.
I can't imagine you'd have a lot of success. But
it's like playing it on a keyboard.
Yeah. So I don't know how you'd actually manage to really, succeed, not even performing dribbling moves. But to that end, the latest poll, it ends in about a day's time from when we're recording this, and about 14,500 people have participated in this poll already. And this is, how do you use the right stick on offense? Only for dribble moves, only for shots, dribbles and all shots, and dribbles and some shots. And again, I would have thought that maybe there'd be a lot more people using it for shooting, because traditionally a lot of people have said they like using the right stick for shooting, and that's they've criticized Live for not having that, although Live does have that now, the right stick shooting as well as the dribbling, and saying, why the dribble moves on the right stick. There was a bit of resistance to adding the dribble moves on the right stick originally. Not from me. I love that, because, again, coming from Live, that's what I wanted to see. Rather than having the isomotion trigger and just using the left stick, the right stick, I feel, is much, again, more logical, less contrived. But looking at the results... 53% at the moment, only for dribble moves. And second, 37%, which is actually what I voted for, is dribbles and some shots. But only 2% only for shots, and 8% dribbles and all shots. So the shot stick part of the pro stick, because originally, of course, the right stick in 2K was the shot stick, and then when they combined it became the pro stick. It seems to be that dribbling is the more popular usage of the stick, and most people are still using... They're still going to the shoot button. And again, I'm a bit surprised by those results.
Same. I mean, in a way, I'm kind of not for this year. Like, if it was... Say if this was the result for 2K17, I think I'd be a little bit more surprised, and that's because they really made...
Oh, the aiming. The aiming made it popular last year, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was a big sort of... selling point in terms of, you know, being, you know, about skill and stuff like that. But yeah, this year there was really no, I don't want to say marketing, but, you know, no sort of real marketing spiel about it in that sort of sense. You know, the PR sort of stuff about, you know, using the stick matters and all that stuff like they did for 2K17 and that. So I'm not surprised in a way, compared to, like I said, if it was last year, it'd be a different story. I ticked dribble moves only. I've probably rarely used the stick in for shots or layups or dunks and stuff, more in practice modes or drills and stuff like that, I pretty much tend to use the button more in the actual game. It would be just maybe once or twice that I would try using the stick in a game. So I think for me, like, I was sort of debating after I had made my choice, and that when I submitted my vote, it was like, should I have included maybe for some shots? But just as before we started recording, I was like, well, if I really think about it, yeah, it was more practice modes, like with the acrobat and trying to get the acrobat badge and stuff like that, or is more when I use it, or just when we're like warming up or waiting in the practice arena for pro-am, and that is, or doing the training gym stuff, is more when I use it. So it didn't make sense for me to realistically tick it or pick that option or vote for that option in a game mode sense. So, sure. Like, well, in playing an actual game in that sort of sense. So
it's what you sort of lean to, really, just using the dribble moves. And again, I'm a little bit surprised by the results, but in seeing this, and admittedly, it's a small sample size, but I guess it's a cross section, a microcosm of the what gamers are feeling, and this is where they're getting the feedback from. It will be interesting to see if they actually take this feedback into account as they're sorting out the core mechanics for NBA 2K19, because certainly that's what it sounds like Mike is trying to do here, is figure out how people are using those core control mechanics, and whether they're, again, what they prefer as far as the pro stick orientation, and now how are people actually really using the shot stick for the pro stick for shooting, because that depends whether they're going to have stick aiming, things like that. I mean, I tend to use the pro stick on free throws, actually. Not so much jump shots this year, but for free throws, I find it seems to work a little bit better, or I'm better on the timing, it works for me. But I kind of switch back and forth, and that's a habit that goes back to last year when I was trying out the pro stick a little bit more for shooting. But if they do make those adjustments, that's obviously, this is the kind of feedback they need. And there's other things you need to do with the core mechanics of the game as well, but I do like that they're focusing on the, you know, some people might say it's the minutia of the gameplay, that such camera relative settings, absolute settings, and what people are doing, but finding out how people are playing the game and using the controls, because controls obviously being such a core important aspect of how the game plays and how it feels on the sticks. I am glad to see that they're doing that and really soliciting the feedback from the community, because obviously we put out our wish lists, we submit them, and they're, you know, received with thanks and enthusiasm. But for them to follow up, not just on our wish list, of course, but what they're doing in Operation Sports and all around the internet and Reddit and all the YouTubers and that they liaise with and everything, the fact that they are really listening to that, it does make me feel a little bit better about it, because it did seem, you know, we've talked before about the arrogance or that nature of, we can do whatever we want, or, you know, pushing the company itself and the PR pushes the success of 2K, but the developers themselves, I do think it should be noted, really do give a damn, and doing things like this and reaching out to the community and asking, you know, tell us how we can make the game better for you, and how do you play the game, and what improvements do you want to see? Yeah, it reinforces that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I hope they do follow through and really take on board, you know, this kind of feedback. And I really hope they do a lot more. With the sort of going back to that sort of questionnaire for those who didn't get, those who stopped playing the game and they get the email with that survey thing, I really hope that, I'm glad that you could tick multiple options and you had other, when I really hope that they had like a very large word limit in terms of other, like, you know, it wasn't like a 250 word or 250 character limit, because that would be a really good way to really sort of not hammer, but, you know, really give a clear understanding of, you know, some of the direction choices that they've made, that it's like, well, this didn't work, or this is going too far with this sort of this business model and that, and, you know, you're taking, in doing so, you're taking away what was good about the game in that sort of sense. So I really hope that if people do get that survey, you know, that they really use, especially that other option, you know, really get to voice their, you know, their honest opinion and in their thoughts, and, you know, sort of hammer it in without it being like an abusive tone in that, where they, you know, because they're going to directly read that response from these surveys. It's probably one of the better ways to actually get through to them, that saying, well, this, you know, what you're doing here is not working. So, you know, if you get that chance, if you know, if you are one of those ones that get, don't waste the opportunity. That's all I'm going to say. And hopefully, you know, again, we'll get more of these kind of like Twitter surveys and things like that, on all vote and polls and stuff like that from Mike Wang and potentially other gameplay developers and all that stuff. And
sure.
So, you know,
I mean, I'd like to see them ask a bit more about the neighborhood and things like that. Did you enjoy the neighborhood? And frankly, no. And this is why, kind of thing. And it all comes down to that constructive feedback. And no, I'm glad that they're paying attention, that they're actually actively soliciting it. It reinforces that what we said before, is that while we may not agree with the direction of the company and some of the ways that they conduct themselves, the people actually working on the game are passionate and do give a damn.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, what you were saying about the name of stuff, again, in that survey, would be a perfect opportunity of saying, well, you know, pointless, it's a loading screen zone, really, you know, going from one place to another to then having to go to this, you know, where it's just easier to do it in like a menu system. Like 2K17 had a pretty good menu system, considering how bad 2K14's was, and 2K18's was technically worse because it was
lacking menus, basically.
Yeah, it was just all about, and it was just time consuming just to go do one simple thing. It was basically 10 minutes of work, and you could just do it in like 10-20 seconds in a menu. It was just sort of pointless and stupid. So I really hope that, you know, they go back to sort of simplifying things that don't need that chaotic system for no reason, or, you know, just as a weird cosmetic sort of thing, like the neighborhood is, and that. I'd miss the simplicity of the 2K17 menus, and where you can actually do it all in the one spot instead of having to go to four different places to go do the one damn thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of doing what Kenny's doing and maybe going back to 2K17 for a bit, and maybe dusting off my career and see how I enjoy that again. Whether I enjoy that a bit more than I have been 2K18, because as we'll discuss in our week in basketball gaming in a little bit, I haven't really been doing anything with 2K the past week or so since we decided to take a break from Pro-Am. And obviously, I have been playing, so I haven't received that survey, but clearly they have noticed that there has been that drop-off in play, that they have noticed people have given up on the game or taken these lengthy breaks from it. They're wanting to know why, so yeah, again, hats off to them for recognizing the issue and trying for some goodwill, because we've criticized them for the lack of goodwill. So by the same token, kudos for actually recognizing an issue and trying to do something about it.
Yeah. And again, hopefully it is for the right reasons. And you know,
ultimately a positive result, I guess.
Yeah, you know, that's, everyone wins in that way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, again, you just end up screwing your customer base and your loyal fan base in that sort of sense.
And yourself if you're going to do that in the long run.
Yep. You know.
And of course, it's not just EA and 2K that are looking at user feedback and putting that to good use. Of course, Saber Interactive have been looking to do that. They've been listening, as they've said, to what people have said about last year's release, NBA Playgrounds. NBA Playgrounds 2 has been officially announced with a vague release date of summer 2018, as we discussed in last week's show. And again, I think it's good that they are bringing out a sequel so quickly. If you look back at, Kenny mentioned Street Fighter, all the iterations of Street Fighter 2 that came out back in the 90s, all the different versions of that. And of course, NBA Jam Tournament Edition came out the year after the original NBA Jam. Hang Time came out not that long after that. So there is a history, you know. On Fire Edition came out after the 2010 reboot of NBA Jam that EA did. So there is precedent for having that sequel come out the year after if it really builds on that first game. You don't need it every year, but sometimes a sequel coming out the next year is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think that is the case with Playgrounds 2. I think that's a good decision, as long as they are building on the original and are able to avoid the same issues that they had with NBA Playgrounds, and that it's not just, you know, a solid NBA Jam style game, but a really, really good arcade basketball game, which I do think it has the potential to be. But interestingly, with that summer 2018 release, a lot of pre-order pages are coming out for the moment for Steam and also PS4, so PC and PS4, mentioning a May release, which would line up with last year's. And not sure whether that's... there's nothing that's really been confirmed by Saber at this point. It could just be a placeholder based on last year's release. But it is worth noting, of course, that May is not summer. You know, certainly not here in Australia, but not in fact, nowhere in the world is May summer. Well, I guess kind of here in Australia. We don't really get autumn that much, or fall, if you prefer. Certainly will not.
Where I live, you basically have 5 days of winter.
And here in Newcastle, it does get a bit cooler in winter than up there in Queensland. But yeah, point is, nowhere in the world is May anything but either spring or autumn. So interesting that it's listed for a May release when they said summer 2018. And look, if it comes out next month, late next month, as it's suggested by some of these pre-order pages, okay, as long as it's had the work done on it. But knowing how much work really I would like to see them put into Playgrounds 2 to make it this really well-rounded, deep game, I'm a little tentative about that. I don't mind a later release if it means a better game.
Yeah, and, you know, given that, you know, when the next season comes out, you know, you got a bit of a window of opportunity. I can understand if you want to try and get the game out before 2K and Live.
Yeah, you definitely, I think, want to do that. You want to space it out a bit.
But, you know, even if it's, like, 4 to even, like, maybe at most 2... Yeah, we'll say at least about 6 weeks beforehand, so you have a little bit of breathing room.
So anywhere from like late July to early August, basically.
Maybe 2 months before the two off season, because usually Live and that are kind of all
mid July.
Yeah, we'll say July, August. We'll say August. I think probably a better window in that sort of sense. Yeah. And I think, you know, well, that
it,
way
it also
a bit
means
of breathing
you can
room.
You can include some of the rookies then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you wait till after the draft aspect, you know, and maybe even a few of the free agent signings.
Absolutely, which you can't do, and then you have to add the extra cards, so you've got the multiples. You can obviously add the rookies, but then do you do it like you did last year where they end up being paid DLC? I mean, that was not a good look for Saber when they added Lonzo Ball and everyone and the other class of 2017 rookies, when they added those as paid DLC. People weren't happy, especially because you also had to still earn them in packs. So you had to pay for the chance to grind for packs, which wasn't the best way of doing it. And also, originally, the roster unlock, if you bought the roster unlock DLC, it didn't work with the Hot and Frosty DLC straight away. So they needed to fix that. And of course, there was all the problems with the Switch version. So I think Saber has to be very careful about the goodwill, not only from what they've done, but of course, and I mentioned this in my article about NBA Playgrounds 2 and the great opportunity that it has. You know, people are also feeling burned from 2K. So even though that's not Saber's problem, people are really on, you know, basketball gamers are really on edge about being taken advantage of and that lack of goodwill. So on top of having a few missteps themselves, Saber also has the potential of feeling that backlash, residual backlash from 2K.
Flow-on effect.
Yeah, domino effect of this backlash that's been basically over basketball gaming in general, or even video gaming in general, when you look at Battlefront 2 and other controversies with loot boxes and whatnot. So they do need to be careful, especially because they do have such a great opportunity. But it's still up in the air at the moment, I think. I don't think they've confirmed a May release. It could just be
a placeholder.
But it is noteworthy that it's there on the that you can pre-order already, and that it does mention a May release. So it suggests there is some credibility to that.
Okay. Take more time with it. It's not a rush thing. You only hurt yourself if you put out something that's not ready yet in that sort of sense, or, you know, can do it the extra few months. You know, we've got to take into account too that they kind of had to redo the Switch version because of the patch issue stuff and how their system was set up on the, for Nintendo and that. So, I think give it a few more weeks. You know, even if it's after mid year, I think all the better in that sort of sense. And again, like we stated, you'd be able to get the new rookies and the free agent signings and stuff like that. So there's not too much of a rush for it at this point.
So we will see, and we'll definitely post any information as it comes available and confirmed one way or the other. I am optimistic for NBA Playgrounds 2, because it does sound like they've taken some of the shortcomings of the first game into account and what people have been saying. I hope they've been listening to the people who have good suggestions and not the ones that are shouting down any constructive feedback as hating and people being lousy at the game. The whole get good crowd I saw that in the group, and there's been some really good suggestions there, and Matthew Karcher himself has been very gracious and open to it, but there have been some people that are just basically shooting down the really constructive feedback and good ideas for the game, and people who are pointing out, look, these mechanics aren't good, you know, there's a reason that arcade basketball games are designed this way or that way, and why this is done and why that isn't done. And I understand if you really do like the game and like the mechanics, you might say, I might disagree, but the whole idea is, oh, you just suck at the game, that's not a good idea. No, I mean, there's definitely people who are really good at basketball games and gaming in general who, it's not saying we can't play the game, we're certainly winning the games, but the experience itself is not as enjoyable as it could be. And we see it a lot in Live and 2K. If it's either people not being constructive with their feedback, it's people shooting down constructive feedback, and we just at each other's throats. And that we do have this this great opportunity these days with social media and everything to be connected to the people who make the games, and that everyone can give their feedback much more easily. I mean, back in the day when we were compiling our wish lists, maybe a few fan sites like the NLSC back in the day had developed the rapport with the developers and had an in with them to send them feedback. And obviously we still do have that, but a lot more people have that these days. Anyone can tweet at them or join these groups on Facebook and communicate with the developers. So don't waste these opportunities to say, hey, you know, these are my ideas of how to improve the game. This is what I like. This is what I don't like. Say it politely, of course, but and be constructive with it. But this idea that, you know, that you have to be of a certain skill level to make a good suggestion, or that if you make a suggestion, you mustn't be good at the game or something. It's really quite toxic, I think, and it prevents us from giving us feedback that it could be as good as possible. And the best word I can use is toxic. It just doesn't do anything for a gaming community.
Yeah, I agree. And in the end, the gamers miss out on, you know, potentially good suggestions coming out. So, you know, the developers will go, hey, you know, that's a brilliant idea. We could incorporate this by doing this sort of thing and that, you know. So in the end, we don't get as good a product in the end and potentially in the long run. So, you know, I think, you know, if people do have really good ideas or just have an idea in general, should be allowed to voice them. You know, you don't have to troll and basically be a nuisance in terms of, you know, downright hating on their idea. It's like, oh, okay, maybe I don't agree with so much with maybe this small part, but there is some merit in this part of what you're saying, and, you know, so I think, you know, you can find something. Surely you could find something that might be like a slight positive in what they're saying. Like if you don't agree with the entire thing, there might be an element that was like, okay, well, this small section here of what you're saying, I get, and I think, you know, yes, I think something along those lines could help improve and benefit the game in that sort of sense, you know.
Yeah, sure, so, and even if you do disagree entirely, provide a counterpoint. Say, you know, I honestly don't agree with any of that, and this is why. This is why I like it as it is, or this is why I prefer this instead. You know, shooting down the idea and with the ad hominem of saying that they're terrible at the game or they're haters or they don't know what they're talking about, you know, some people may be lousy at the game and blame it on the game. Some people may be haters. Some people may not know what they're talking about. But a lot of people actually do. They know what they like out of a product, especially when there's such a long history of these products of arcade basketball games. So, yeah, it's been disheartening to see, and it's why I've been very reluctant to actually throw my two cents in about these things and get involved in a very toxic discussion about it, because it feels like, it's going to be drowned out. But hopefully they have listened to the people who have had constructive feedback and have pointed out the issues, and obviously they've evaluated it themselves. So, yeah, I'm optimistic with Playgrounds 2. I do think it has a tremendous opportunity. If it hasn't really improved on the first one, I don't know whether there's going to be much interest in a Playgrounds 3. You know, if they haven't really done that, if they've basically failed with Playgrounds 2, I think somebody, whether it's EA or somebody else who they license out the brand to, needs to bring back NBA Jam or NBA Street or both at some point, because I would love to see that anyway. But certainly, if Playgrounds 2 falls flat, I think that there is too big of a market there with arcade basketball games to not capitalize on that in some way.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, and I'd love to see an NBA Street again. Just, you know, it had a few extra different modes to it. It was a different way of entertaining in arcade ball as opposed to like Street and Playground. So, you know, it was I think for me, I'd like to see a little bit more of that sort of game being developed again. Hopefully someone does.
So we will see about that, and that will of course add to our basketball gaming rotation, no doubt. But for the meantime, we can only play the games that we do have, and we will talk a little bit about them now in our week in basketball gaming.
Oh, that's a devastating dunk in his face. Oh, he just stole his heart with that dunk right there.
We are taking a bit of a break from NBA 2K18. This is, of course, the benefit of having two games on the market that you can go back and forth. I mean, you can always go back to an old favorite, of course, but the further along you get, it is hard to go back to some of the old favorites because they do start to feel a bit dated. Although I still like a bit of NBA Live 06 now and again. But we are taking a break from NBA 2K, which is a shame. I did miss it on Friday night. A little bit. I missed hanging out with you guys online. Some of the frustrating moments, I didn't miss that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was kind of the same, but I mean, I was just exhausted. So I actually... I slept a lot that night.
Sure.
I think I went to bed, I think around 7 p.m. or something like that. So that's it. I forgot about, I think there was like a game or there was something I was keen to watch, but I was just too exhausted to watch it and that. So yeah, it was nice to catch up on some of the sleep that I've been trying to get my sleep pattern back, especially with all these migraines and stuff like that. So, but yeah, you know, the jokes and the banter element, you know, I miss that. But yeah, it was, I think in terms of that's the 2K, I think it's needed at the moment
It is. And this is the second time this year within the past 3 or 4 months that we've taken a break from Pro-Am. We did take a few breaks last year, and that tended to work out well for us. But I mean, we played 500 games or over 500 games last year, so there definitely hasn't been the same enthusiasm this year. There hasn't been the multiple sessions during the week. Sometimes we've suggested, do you want to play? But no one's really been that. We haven't really had at least 3 or 4 people enthused about it, playing more than one session a week, and a couple of sessions have felt good, as we've said. And then recently, they've just kind of dropped off again. Maybe it seems to be after the 2K League is starting up again, or getting after the combine ended. Maybe everyone flooded back to the mode, and we didn't. We were not having as fun because some of the cheeses were coming back to the mode. We've tried, I think, maybe to push things a little bit too hard with the with the play calling, maybe. We've put a bit too much pressure on ourselves, and then we've defended poorly in a couple of games the other week and gave up way too many points. We weren't doing a great job, and it's just... The chemistry wasn't there on the virtual hardwood, so to speak, and we were just getting too frustrated. So I think it's a good move to take a break. But in that, I've actually taken a break completely, and I know this is our week in basketball gaming, not our week in not what we're not playing. But but again, it shows to last year, even when we weren't playing Pro-Am, I was really getting into my career, getting into the second year, you know, playing every game, 12-minute quarters. Of course, towards the end of the regular season, I was simulating to the end of a few games when I was up by heaps at the end of the fourth quarter, or towards the end of the fourth quarter, I should say, was simulating a bit. So, but basically, I was still playing my career, and even though I've still got, well, I'm 90 overall at the moment, so I've still got progress that I could make on the road to 99, yeah, I just don't really feel that inclined to play. I feel quite burned out on the whole grind and running through the neighborhood and doing all the drills, having to have practice every single day, or to really improve, you have to do the practice in between every game.
Yeah,
and it just feels so repetitive, and coming out and getting that fourth drill by going to the fresh squeeze stand and back and forth, and that adds about 2 minutes to there's about 2 minutes of loading with that. So all the loading, as you said, and with the neighborhood being almost like a glorified loading screen, yeah, it's just the whole vibe of the game hasn't been there this year, and it's disappointing because there is still months to go before 2K19, and last year I'd be playing 2K17 right up until 2K18 came out, but this year, yeah, I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And even just to sort of get the motivation to play like some of the different modes, it's just not there at the moment, which is a shame because, you know, some of the classic teams and stuff like that. But I mean, like, even 2K themselves, they really haven't added new content in like a couple of months. So it's like they've even sort of given up on it in a lot of ways too. So I think that reflects a little bit in terms of wanting to play the game, and there's nothing to make it sort of feel fresh, or, you know, it's like, oh, they've done this, or they've added this sort of thing. Let's give this a go. Like, even, you know, when they did the Park After Dark stuff, that was relatively late in the year.
Yeah, you know, that got us into playing a bit of My Park last year.
Yeah, so it's interesting this year in terms of it. There just seems to be this sort of shift, like they've kind of just, you know, like they basically Iverson stepped over and sort of walking past it now, and that's sort of their own product in a lot of ways, which isn't good in that sort of sense. I mean, credit to Live, they're still trying to add, you know, the content stuff, even though a lot of new content like things haven't gone in a few months either, but with the challenges stuff and the live events, you know, it still feels like there's something new, or if you missed out on something, you know, it's a good way to go back and maybe try and get it. So there's something there that makes the game sort of a little bit more alluring in terms of, you know, wanting to get maybe something you missed out on or something like that. So, or something to come back to and all that sort of sense. You know, for me, I mean, I like the last couple of weeks, you know, I haven't been gaming as much as I want to have. It's just like generally been Fortnite for the most part, because it's a quick few games here or there, and I'm trying to get better at it, trying out different strategies and stuff. And yeah, but I got to play a little bit of Live today. I really wanted to try and get some more gameplay in that. You know, it had been about 2 weeks or something since I had played it. So I could play a couple of live run events. Played about two live run events with the Cav Challenge, trying to get one of the shirts from that. Didn't do the Rockets one because, well, the Rocket one, not a huge fan of them. And because I got some of the LeBron shoes, like his first day All Zoom Generation 1s, you know, they're one of my favorite LeBron shoes. You know, I was like, something to match, because I got the track, the sort of warm-up track pants and that, so it was like a shirt to match that with the Zoom Generation. So I was like, I just want that, and then I'll be happy. Couple of teams that I did play, you know, had a few losses, and then loading time, like the person that was hosting it forgot to, start the game sort of thing, or, you know, invite new users and that. So after a few minutes waiting, I was like, all right, well, I do want to play some of the league element and that, you know, so I had a little bit more for the podcast to talk about. So played two games of that, and I played the Spurs first game, and I mean, I struggled against them. I'm still trying to learn my new player and all that stuff, and still trying to build them up. But yeah, didn't shoot too well, and it didn't play. Well, not so much didn't shoot too well. It was just I didn't play too well overall. So I ended up losing to the Spurs. And, you know, when you're matching up against Kawhi, it's always going to be a bit of a challenge in that sort of sense. And but I got close. Like, there was a rough period where I think in the second quarter it was down by a fair bit, mainly because team two wasn't shooting too well. And when I got subbed in and subbed out and all that stuff, the lead did expand then. But yeah, clawed back and just got within about, I think, 4 or 6 points, but just couldn't close it out in the end to win it, which is a shame.
People talk about the depth of the one compared to my career, and my career is the deeper mode in terms of presentation and other little things that you can do. But as far as the on-court action, how is it comparing? Because, again, I'm feeling a bit burned out on the whole career stuff and single-player stuff, having done it so much in 2K the past few years, that I haven't really gotten into it that much. I've played some live events, is mostly what I've done. I haven't really touched the league. I do want to do some of the Pro-Am tour. I do want to do a bit of that and just do it. If only to get the trophies, basically, and some of the gear would be nice. But as far as the on-court action, the AI of teammates and play calling, things like that, how does that compare to 2K? Because I felt that took a bit of a step back this year with the gameplay in my career, certainly with teammate AI and things like that. Is it and historically with like Rising Star, you really had to do a lot of stuff yourself, I found. So how's that really working out this year as far as being able to be player locked and play within a system and play with teammates who are doing stuff? Positive stuff, I should say, not just standing around.
To be honest, I find Live's version more of a challenge than my career, like with going against AI opponents and stuff like that.
Yep.
Like, so, like it's harder to just straight drive to the basket in a lot of cases. You know, you have to actually be more strategic, I find, when you play live. You can't do what, like, because you don't have especially like that blow by animation stuff, and because you're doing defensive man is pretty much stays on you a lot.
Not necessarily an unstoppable star straight away sort of thing.
I mean, I'm an 85 now, and with my second character in live, I got up to a 98 with my first one. And yeah, like especially when I was matched up against Kawhi, it was very hard. Even when he subbed out, the person that was guarding me, I think may have been Rudy Gay. There was a couple of times where, like, probably like the first two players against him was a little bit tricky as well. When I got, I definitely scored a lot easier after that against Rudy as opposed to when it was against Kawhi. But yeah, I find that you can't do this the typical dribble move and then do the blow-by sort of animation stuff in live like you can in 2K. So I mean, I think live is a little bit more, it's not as easy in terms of, you definitely have to play smarter in terms of it and use some screens or try and set up some plays more where I think 2K, I can just sort of pretty much get by most guys very easily, and just attack the rim pretty much 90-something% of the time in that sort of sense. So So yeah, and I think if you're not in a mood where you're wanting to sort of really concentrate and play or focus and play, and if you just sort of, I think you will struggle more.
Right.
I think, you know, if you're just wanting that sort of, dare I even say it, arcade action, where you just sort of just, you know, go straight to the rim to dunk. It's easier in 2K in that sort of sense, which might probably throw a lot of people off, but that's the way I felt with the game this year. I think, yeah, there's, especially with the way the animation based system with the defensive catch ups and stuff like that, and defensive stancing and all that, how it's a little bit more, there's a bit more control in it in that sort of sense. I think
the hip riding is huge, as we've said before, in 2K18, the motion system. So I might have to check out a bit more of the one, whether I'm doing the streets or the league. But again, I have felt a bit burned out on it, which is why I've mostly been sticking to Ultimate Team. As I've said before, I'd love to do a franchise, but I don't like what they've done with franchise this year, and it's still lacking the depth of the old Dynasty mode that I'd really like to see come back, hopefully in Live 19, of course. But you do mention the content updates, and of course that's been coming through for Live, and why I've been enjoying that with Ultimate Team. I'm looking to get into those Masters challenges. The Team of the Week challenges, they're now bringing it down to Team of the Year, so you can get players. They've got, I think, 12 players that you can get, one per week, and I've just got the Andre Drummond player.
Nice.
Andre Drummond card is a 93 overall, like a boosted, you know, Team of the Week card. Basically, the Team of the Week version, which is Team of the Year now, as they go back through all the teams of the week. So that'll be good to do. I still need to do the round one challenges, especially with round one of the playoffs almost over. But they're still there. I went through the preliminary games to get all the cards, and then you've got to get the cards and put them in the lineup to play through all that. So that'll be fun to do, especially with my 90s All-Stars, which I still enjoy playing with. Actually, just in my lineup, I've been starting Hakeem Olajuwon ahead of Shaq. I've switched them around because Shaq's got a better dunk package, and especially now that they've fixed it, so it's nice to do the Shaq attack. I had one where I absolutely destroyed Clint Capella, actually, with Shaq. He just got there on the... he just basically was able to go backdoor and hit him with the lob pass and just went up for the Shaq attack, basically. And, yeah, Clint Capella was a little bit slow on the jump and got put on a poster. So, yeah, and Live is still doing that, and there is the controversies that we talked about before, and there's certainly ways they could be doing it better. But there doesn't seem, as you said, there doesn't seem to be that content for 2K like in previous years. And I guess it does come down to the focus on the 2K League, which tips off next week, May 1st, of course. So that is something that I hope, once that's all sorted out and that's established and they're happy with it, that maybe everyone else, the paying customers, can get some more new content. A lot of people will be really wanting some pink diamond cards in my team, things like that. And I haven't really touched my team this year because I've mostly been doing Ultimate Team in Live. But maybe I'll do a little bit more of that because it's such a... I enjoy the fantasy element of it, and it's easy to pick up and play for the shorter quarter lengths compared to how I like to play the franchise modes. So that's why the card collecting, team building modes appeal to me so much. But for the moment, I am just sticking with Live because I've put a bit of money into it for a start to get some of those cards and got some good pulls, so I'm not complaining. And the challenges are pretty fun, and I'm enjoying it. So it has mostly been Ultimate Team for me, but I'm still thinking of going back to 2K17, checking it out. But yeah, Ultimate Team has basically been my mode of choice, at least until they can update franchise mode, hopefully next year, because I don't like the move to the simulate a week at a time. I like the calendar system from the old Dynasty mode, and just getting that back and some of the depth back that we've had, and now that we have roster editing back in the game, getting the ability to edit jersey numbers. It's such a small thing, really, to edit jersey numbers, but at the same time, if I'm playing with the Bulls and I trade for someone who's number 23, I don't want them to wear number 23. You know, I want to assign them a different number. So in lieu of restricting retired numbers, which is also a good idea that I would absolutely advocate for them implementing, much the way that 2K is done in my league and my GM and my career for that matter. You can't pick 23 for the Bulls because it's restricted because it's retired, for example. But the ability to edit that and change that jersey number, just little things like that used to be in the game, and it's much like roster editing. I talked about the importance of playoff modes in this week's Friday Five. The important thing for both games moving forward, and especially for live as it continues to expand, is for it to have all the staples that it used to have. I mean, some things are outmoded. You don't need a standalone season mode. At most, that can be an option if you want to play a single season with limited salary cap and things like that. You could make that an option for franchise mode. You don't need to have a whole separate mode for that. But you need playoffs, you need roster editing, which we have, and you need all those little staples of features that were in the previous games, because they are important. They are a vital part of the experience, so you really miss them when they're gone. But Ultimate Team, the content's coming through, so I don't have too many complaints about that. It's I find that I've got a lot of stuff to really sink my teeth into over the break, basically. Even once they stop pushing through new content, I'll have all the Masters challenges to go back and try, and including the ones that are more grindy and the ones that are less grindy. So I think I'll be able to amuse myself, basically, once the NBA season's over and while we're waiting for Live 19 and 2K19. And maybe I'll even look at a bit of Ultimate Team. My Team then as well. But at the moment I've been really just focusing on that and just building up the collection. But there's been a bit of a crash in the auction house with some of the cards, and you can get some legends and really good cards very cheaply at the moment. So it's not a bad time to start building an Ultimate Team, actually.
That's cool. Just a couple of things. The second game I got to play was against the Lakers, and I was like, after losing to the Spurs, I was like, there's no way I'm going to lose to the Lakers. So I ended up winning by a pretty comfortable margin with that, so I was pretty happy with that. But I was sort of thinking, I've actually been sort of thinking about this question for a few weeks in regards to the whole 2K league, and you know how in the My Career thing, how you get to do, get sponsorship deals and all that stuff. And I was sort of thinking, you know, in terms of like, with these players and all that stuff for the 2K league, will they get sponsorship deals and all that sort of stuff, you know, and that translate into the game, you know, say if one of the guys, you might wear Jordans in the game and sort of thing, and if he, you know, gets enough interest from the actual brand itself, you know, could that translate to them getting like a real instead of a virtual contract and all that stuff with these brands as well? So I was sort of thinking, you know, I wonder if any of that kind of stuff would happen and if that would translate into real life sort of thing, as aside from just in-game, you know, if that happens within the game as well, if the build that they play, obviously, or whether they're just wearing, you know, the 2K generic sort of sneakers or things, or if they get to wear the shoes or wear the products that they want within the game already sort of stuff. So I know, it was just sort of something that came to mind. I was like, I wonder if any of that kind of stuff could happen.
They're appearing on the Jump. You got gamers appearing on the Jump. Dimes. Was it Dimes that was on the Jump?
I know he had a photo with Conan O'Brien. I was like, me too, buddy.
Yeah. Last year, yeah.
Beat you to it, buddy, and I didn't need to get drafted.
That's right. So, I mean, that is possible, I suppose, and certainly, you know, they're trying to go all out on making it a brand, but it comes back to, again, me looking at us, the poor schmucks, the schmoes who are paying for the games and playing them. You know, I just hope we don't get left out in the cold moving forward.
Who'll get the Reese's Pieces contract first?
Reese's Puffs, yeah.
Oh, that's right, Reese's Puffs.
Hopefully not Beef Fresh, but... Another reason why I'm not playing My Career, the possibility of seeing the cutscenes featuring my favorite characters, all of them this year, yeah. That's mostly what I've been playing. I've even been thinking of dusting off a bit of NBA Live, you know, some of the classic games, NBA Live 06, things like that. I want to do a bit more modding. I haven't released the stuff that I wanted to do this month, but I have been working on a few things in the background. Speaking of our Pro-Am squad, I actually recreated us in NBA Live 06, as you saw in our chat group there that we have, our private group. Still want to make some artwork for it and maybe turn it into a bit of a feature I'll do for Monday Tip-Off or something fun like that. But I actually played with all of us in practice. I took us into the practice court and shot around with each of us individually. And because I've set it up so that we have the Freestyle Superstars I chose 06 because of the way Freestyle Superstars is set up, and I thought, well, they can kind of correspond to our playstyle archetypes. And I have to say, you know, giving you the high flyer actually does, you know, pull off some dunks that I've seen you pull off. I mean, the animations aren't quite as good as 2K18, of course, but nevertheless, they've actually worked out in giving X the shooter, Freestyle Superstars, and giving Valor Leo the outside scorer, some of these floaters and layups and things that he does, and that's all sort of worked out. So I'm like, yeah, this could actually be it. And it's funny, I've got three AIs on the bench, and they've got pretty lousy ratings. But yeah, what I'm going to do is I've got the internal version that's got our names in it, so I'll do an external version if I can complete a patch, and just put it out there as a mod, just with our internet handles on there, and yeah, just fun to play with us basically in Live 06.
See if I can
Pro-Am 06 basically.
I'll see if I can find any of the PSD templates that I have of jerseys and that from when I was patching that around that time. I'm pretty certain I have all my PSDs on my computer that died.
I've got one. I've got the basic one that's up in our download section for doing that. So I'll give it a shot, and I can send that one through to you to see if it's anything that can be done with it.
Yeah, and then that way I can recreate the actual NLSC one and that.
Because I can do the courts, and I can do, obviously, the rosters, and I can do logos, but the only thing I've never really done anything with is jerseys. So that'd be cool if we could throw that out there as Pro-Am 06, basically.
If you could throw me that.
I'll send that along and see what we can do just to do that, because I would like to put a few more mods out for Live and a bit of 2K as well. I've got a few ideas that I've been cooking on. I was thinking of having an add-on April just for myself, but I haven't really been able to do anything. But I've been fiddling around with a few things, so I'd just like to... I do miss modding. You know, I'm obviously creating other content these days, and I do enjoy that, and podcasts, and my articles, and a bit of video content here and there. But, you know, it's fun to tinker with the games and make cool stuff. So, yes, stay tuned. I will have a few more things out. It's just whenever I can find the time.
I still want to try and also get our Pro-Am jerseys in 2K18 on PC as well. So if any 2K18 patches, like or modders or jersey patches and stuff, can contact me on the LSC via private message, find out what the process is for the templates and what, you know, if they can help me sort of create it, you know.
I know KSMiz has just released a couple of template files that help with the UV mapping.
Okay.
So there are some resources. I'll see if I can find them for you. But if we can reach out to some people, or people can contact you about it, that'd be cool. So we can get the Pro-Am jerseys into the game. Because obviously you can put out the how to create them through customization, through the in-game customization as far as rebranding and things. Because there's a couple of people who do that. NBA Bones on Twitter, shout out to him. Does some great designs how you can do that for your My Team if you want to create jerseys using the jersey creator. You know, obviously you can buy them or win them in packs and everything, but you can also, once you unlock the ability to create your own jerseys, he's shown you how you can actually recreate them yourself. Yep. So there's some really cool stuff there, and he'd even put together the All-Star jerseys from the early mid 90s. Ones, like, he even has done some retro ones like that, and really looking really cool. So I'll send you along his Twitter, actually. He's got some good creations. So that's obviously what you can do in-game. But, yeah, as far as the external manipulation, there's a few things to learn there. It's not as easy as we used to have with Live, unfortunately.
And especially, because I'm looking at numbers and, given that I've got a custom number set and all that stuff, that's in particular used for our jerseys and that, it's like, going to be a little bit tricky. And getting it in, and it's like getting it in the game in that sort of sense, especially with the limited options. Although they do have like 130 options in terms of fonts and that in the game for some things and that.
If only they had 133, that's we're missing the one we need. So that's the problem.
So hopefully, if someone can contact me in regards to that. That'd be awesome, because I'd like to get our NSC jerseys in the game. We've obviously gotten the t-shirt stuff in the t-shirt creator on PS4. And then, so trying to bring that a little bit more to the PC side of things would be cool. Just that'll be probably a way I can, you know, contribute something a little bit more to the community in that sort of sense.
Sure. So I think that's about it for our basketball gaming, for this week at least. Stay tuned for more stories next week and hopefully a few more modding releases here and there. Before we wrap up this week's show, episode number 246, of course, talk a little bit about the real NBA. The playoffs are going on. We're actually almost at the end of round one. In fact, there's only one game left to be decided in round one. It is the seventh game between the Cavs and Raptors. The Cavs and the Pacers. I've got Raptors written down underneath Cavs. That's my fault there. The next round could be between the Cavs and Raptors if the Cavs advance. Otherwise, it will be the Pacers and the Raptors, 1-4 or 1-5. This is the one I said that I wouldn't be surprised if the Pacers pulled off the upset. And certainly early on, that looked like it could happen. While I wouldn't be completely shocked because they have been pretty good in this series and have given the Cavs all they can take, had a big win in Game 6 to stay alive and force the Game 7. Considering that they lost momentum when they lost Game 4 and then lost Game 5 as well and got down 3-2, the way they've lost momentum, I would be a little bit surprised if they pull out that win in Cleveland to take the series and pull off the upset. I'm still picking I've had the Cavs in 6 and I think it's going to be Cavs in 7, but would be surprised, but wouldn't be surprised. It's hard. I know that sounds really weaselly and silly, but a little bit surprised considering how they lost momentum, but I did think they had a chance to win, so I'm not totally shocked, but I can't think of how to put it, basically. And it's not a total surprise because I think they're capable of it, but the way it's gone down, surprising that they will have pulled it off this way, having lost the momentum and winning it Game 7 on the road in Cleveland if they do it. But I do think it's going to be the Cavs. LeBron does play really well in elimination games and Game 7s. 4-2 in Game 7s for his career. A lot of talk after Game 5 that he's the greatest of all time by your usual Nick Wrights and other assorted stans and fanboys. But obviously, you know, for all that talk and my belief about who is the greatest player of all time, LeBron's still a fantastic player, one of the greatest of all time. Hard to pick against him in a Game 7, especially at home.
For me, I kind of would like to see the upset.
I'd love to see it. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I admit, for me, I don't want to say shit stirring, but in terms of, how the scenario plays out after in terms of when it comes to free agency and all that stuff, and just that sort of dynamic and intrigue of the free agency and will he stay, will he go, who does he sign with if he goes, kind of thing. And
well, people are pegging him to leave, and and the funny thing is that people are saying now he needs help. That's the big thing. When LeBron wins, he makes people better. When he loses, he needs help. I'm like, well, pick one. But people were saying after they made the trade that they got a lot better, that they improved. And LeBron himself has that classic quote, that now infamous quote, I should say, now we have an effing squad. You know, he declared that the team was better. And so if they lose, to turn around and say, oh, well, the squad isn't good, I'm like, well, that's... Well, I suppose it wasn't as good as you thought, but it's still backtracking on a lot of proclamations about how the squad is supposed to be a much better team post-trade than they made. So, and again, as you said, moving forward, if he's not happy with that F-ing squad now, is he going to move on?
Move to F on.
is he going to F off? Yeah, to some other team. That's basically the question now.
Yeah, I think realistically he will move on.
I've been wrong every time. Well, the two times, I should say. 2010, I thought he was staying in Cleveland. Nah, obviously. He took his talents to South Beach. 2014, I thought, he's just opting out to get a bigger contract with the Heat. He went back to Cleveland. So I really have no idea. I really have no effing idea what LeBron James is going to do. I suppose only LeBron James knows. And those closest to him, but yeah, it's possible he could move on, because every time I've thought he's going to stay put and he hasn't, so yeah, maybe. Does he take his talents back to South Beach? Does he just go back and forth? This is, because remember in 2K14, the Path to Greatness mode in the last-gen version of 2K14, the PC and PS3 Xbox version, one of the paths where he, the Fantastic Journey, where he leaves and he goes, he returns to Cleveland, he goes to New York, and he actually comes back to Miami to finish his career. So we haven't seen the New York one yet. I'm sure Knicks fans would probably appreciate it if that happened, but Jalen Rose said it would happen back in 2008. Didn't happen. Just, you know, spoilers for anyone waking up from a coma and decided to catch up on the news through the NLC podcast, but that didn't happen. He hasn't gone to New York yet, but maybe. I say I've been wrong every time, so if I say he's going elsewhere, he's probably going to stay in Cleveland, so who knows?
Well, I mean, he has said the only two teams that he played for was Cleveland and Miami, but, you know, who knows realistically if he did honestly mean that.
He also said he'd compete in the dunk contest as well.
Exactly. You know. So, you know.
Not to dredge up old wounds or anything, but, you know, he said it.
Yep. But, so, yeah, it's interesting in terms of it. It's more just to sort of see. And it's, you know, given the Lakers fans, who they think they're going to get this year in free agency, you know, it's sort of been a running joke the last, say, 3 or 4 years of, you know, the Lakers fans, oh, we're going to get this person and this person and this person. Just you watch. And then all they get is what?
Laurel Dang.
Yeah. So, you know, it's... I kind of want to see, yeah, that joke or that sort of meme continue in that sort of sense.
Hey, didn't LeVar Ball guarantee they'd make the playoffs?
Yep.
Just, and you know, all I'm saying is if you're going to talk crap, you've got to be prepared to eat crap. Call it hating if you want, but if you make proclamations, make predictions, and they don't come to fruition, you've got to own it. That's all I'm saying.
You know, if LeBron does, say, go to the Lakers, you know, what does that mean for Lonzo? You know, will they try and keep him, or will LeBron, you know, make one of his conditions, because he doesn't want to deal with the drama of, or be overshadowed by the drama of LeVar? You know, does he say, well, get rid of Lonzo and you got yourself a deal, in that sort of sense? So there's sort of that dynamic in that sort of way, whether that's going to play out, whether he'll, you know, join the Rockets, or whether he'll go to, say, Philly, because they've got an intriguing team this year, you know. Where, you know, he might want to trust the process. I think it could be just for that sort of thing of where some of these players are expected to go. You know, will Paul George go to the Lakers? And that's I'm just sort of keen to see how all that happens in the free agency market.
So I think we've played it before, what the least likely place for LeBron to go game. Before we said it was Utah.
Yeah.
that might still be the case. Although, I mean, they're obviously doing pretty well in the second round, and it just doesn't seem like that'd be the most random place for him to go. It would be it would feasibly that he might go to a good team that was still unlikely to get him. Clippers are pretty unlikely as well. Especially now that Chris Paul is with the Rockets. So yep. Rockets are much more likely other than that, and Blake Griffin up with the Pistons, of course. Actually, Detroit's pretty unlikely as well. I'm thinking Lakers, Heat, Cavs. Well, I still think Cavs are probably the forerunners. You know, everyone's saying he's gone, but I don't know. I think the pressure's off him to a certain extent, because wherever he is, he's got a pretty good in the East, and I think he's going to stay in the East no matter where he goes. So I'm kind of ruling out the West. Simply because he's got the path to the finals in the East wherever he goes, basically.
I think he'll probably try and avoid the West as well. You know, reign supreme in the other conference, where you don't have to not say it take the easy route, but, you know, just...
Well, the path goes through him. He is the king of the East, basically, so...
Yeah. And, you know, just given how much of a dogfight the West could be, let them fight it out and then basically wear themselves out, and then in that sort of sense. I definitely don't see him going to Toronto. You know, if we're looking at good teams in that sort of sense.
That'd be pretty random, too. He just goes to Canada for...
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
I don't think he'll go to DC either. I think that's one of the least unlikely.
Yeah, well, DC, and much like Portland, actually, they've got some huge payrolls for the next few years, to be fair.
Yeah.
Not so much the Blazers, but a bit with the Wizards are paying a lot of money to some players they probably shouldn't be paying to kind of be mediocre, and they're kind of maxing out, I think, what they can do with their rosters, and they don't have that flexibility. So it's I do think he'll stay in the East. I think he'll stay at the moment. I'll pick him to stay with the Cavs. I'll stick with, you know, third time's the charm. I'm going to pick him to stay, and he's going to stay this time, maybe. Or sorry to Cavs fans, I've just jinxed it. As far as the Game 7, I do think the Cavs are going to get through. I don't know if they're actually going to get through to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think they're necessarily going to get through the NBA Finals. Won't count them out. Don't think they're a lock either. Certainly not compared to maybe the Warriors coming out of the West, being more of a lock to have that for the fourth year in a row. I just hope that there's no shady goaltending calls this time, or known calls from goaltending this time.
Yeah, you know, I think that was one... Were the refs able to review that?
No, because it has to be called goaltending on the floor.
Okay, all right.
And then they can review it. And people are saying, well, he hit the three and it was only a two, but that's a big momentum changer, making that defensive stop and getting the ball like that. That's a big change. And, of course, you're now down by two instead of tied, so you don't have that pressure of, oh, you've got the overtime in your back pocket if you miss the shot. So it's, yes, the final, you know, if add the 2 points and then the three, the Cavs win either way, but it's not as simple as that, because there's other factors there as far as the pressure that's on and the momentum of the game. All those factors, I think, people are discounting, really.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that.
So we've spent a lot of time on the one series that is yet to be decided, I guess, because, again, it's LeBron, so it's one of the most intriguing subjects, I should say. Looking at the rest of the round one has been decided. In fact, we're already into round two. The first team to come out of the round one was the Pelicans, because they were the only team to sweep the first round of all the teams. We didn't pick that to happen. So with the Blazers, I'm looking at some of my predictions. I got Raptors in six right. I said Celtics in five, and it was Celtics in seven. They got through today. Warriors in five. The Spurs managed to get the game to, the win to avoid the sweep. Maybe Ginobili's last game, maybe not. We thought that the last couple of years.
Yeah. What was my prediction for those? Because I forgot to write them mine down. I forgot to write them down as well.
Not sure. I think you might. I don't know if you picked the Bucks or the Celtics in those ones. I think we both picked the Raptors in six, and Warriors in five. Rockets in five. I got 76ers in five. Of course, Wade had that great game in Game 2, but then the 76ers had control of the rest of the series. Ben Simmons having some great performances. Great to see. I said Jazz in 7. I think you might have said the same. They finished it off in 6. And, yeah, so that's the predictions that we have. And I said Cavs in 6. It's going to be Cavs in 7 or Pacers in 7. So
okay.
For the second round, I'm saying Warriors over the Pelicans in 5. They came out and they won the first game fairly handily, even without Stephen Curry still sitting out. I do think the Pelicans can win one, though. I'm also saying Rockets in five and 76ers in six. And, of course, the Raptors' opponent is yet to be determined.
All right. I'll give the Pelicans a chance. You know, I think they can win potentially two games, so... Warriors in six. What's the next ones? We got 76ers and who are they playing? And be
76ers and the Celtics.
Celtics.
See, I think the Celtics, they pulled it out in the seven games, but basically trading off home wins with the Bucks there.
Yeah.
And they're going to have home court advantage again against the 76ers, but they are shorthanded. They don't have Hayward.
Yeah, that's what
out, and I think they're going to run out of steam, basically, with not having those guys.
I think so, too. I think... I'll say Philly in six, but I think there could be a chance of a seven, but I'll say six.
And the Rockets and the Jazz?
I'd love to see the Jazz upset the Rockets. I'm not a Harden fan, so but probably realistically, it'll probably be the Rockets. So if common sense is to prevail in this one,
unless Jingles takes over, of course.
Yeah,
I mean Donovan Mitchell is playing really well. He's looking like a veteran out there to dust off that cliche, but. Certainly appropriate. He outplayed the OK 3, I'd say, especially in game 6, where Westbrook had the 46 points, but on 43 shots, and Melo had, what, 7? Paul George had 5 on 2 of 15.
Yeah, it wasn't good shooting effort.
No, I still think that was worth doing. Like, you need to have that. To go up against the super teams now, you need to have that stacked roster, so that they did what they could. They rolled the dice on getting Melo and Paul George. It was worth it, but I mean, there were question marks from the start. It's not surprising that they didn't gel, because they all need the ball in their hands. They all have that alpha dog mentality, so it's not surprising.
I think realistically, they probably needed more than half a season together. I think it's definitely one of those things where you would need a full season just to try and build a chemistry, and then
They had the full season. Yeah. They were together in the off season.
That's right. Sorry, my apologies. I meant it'd take more of a second year. To build upon the foundation and all, and you know, try and figure out ways to play together, and you know, even with the coaching staff, you know, how they're going to get it to work, and what maybe surrounding pieces can they help acquire to solidify the team and that sort of thing.
It's interesting because Westbrook averaged the triple-double for the second year in a row. He led the league in assists this year, actually. But he's still not really your traditional playmaking point guard coming into the league. He's kind of that by default because of his size. They didn't have him as a 6'3 shooting guard, which is funny because Iverson, as a shorter player, did play shooting guard, at least offensively, for many years. It's kind of... I don't want to take away, because I do think Westbrook is a tremendous player, but his 10 assists, when he gets the 10 assists a game, it's not the same as Rondo getting 10 assists, or your Stocktons when they get double-digit assists, or Magic, or, you know... You look at someone like a Stephon Marbury, who would get 7 or 8 assists per game, or even up to about 9 in his best years, but still isn't necessarily a tremendous floor general. You know, gets the assists because he's got the ball in his hands a lot and he's making a lot of passes, but isn't necessarily running a winning club, running a winning squad.
Yeah,
I think that's the big question mark with Westbrook at the moment, is that he's getting the numbers of a great point guard, but he's not necessarily a great point guard, at least in that playmaking role, even though he's getting the assists. And I guess that's how assists can be deceiving.
Yeah, it's almost like the sort of Kobe assist sort of, in that sort of sense, so, you know, where it, not in the traditional playmaking sense, where he'd get those sort of assists in a full general way, like you're trying to say. So yeah,
looking for the numbers rather than the play kind of thing. So that's how it seems with Westbrook at the moment. I do think he's a tremendous talent, but is he necessarily a franchise player, a floor general like he needs to be? What his numbers would suggest. That's more questionable. And it's going to be interesting what they do moving forward with the Thunder, whether Paul George is going to go elsewhere or whether he's... it's funny, he said in an interview that he's open to the idea of remaining a Thunder. And it reminds me of just how bad the name the Thunder is.
Yeah.
when you got to say that. I mean, I suppose that's like anything. It's like the Magic, I suppose. I'd like to remain a Magic, or I'd like to remain a Heat. You know, unless it's like a thing. Like,
yeah.
You can say Chicago, obviously. You know, yeah, sure, I'd like to remain a Bull. You know, you can kind of have that as a noun, but it's kind of weird to say, yeah, I'd totally like to remain a Thunder. Thunder. It's just...
Well, it's even still, it's like the logo in itself, you know. How do you visually represent a thunder? Like,
I suppose with lightning.
Because it's a sound. Yeah, because it's a sound, and not something technically visual.
Lightning is the visual part. Yeah,
it is associated with something, but it's an actual sound in that sort of sense. So it's kind of hard to create a logo for in terms of it actually representing what it actually is, and that, which is essentially, yeah, a sound. So, yeah, no, I get what you mean, and yeah, it's sort of a weird one in that sort of situation, in reference when you're trying to say, oh, you know, I want to remain a Thunder. So, yeah.
But he, whatever you want to say, he's apparently open to that. Possibility, so I guess we'll see what happens with the OK3, but I don't know how far they can go with, you know, it doesn't seem they're necessarily a good fit, although, as you say, one season together, maybe you bring in a different coach, maybe Billy Donovan is not the coach to get it done, but, I mean, people blamed Durant, they blamed Scott Brooks, they blamed everyone else, maybe it is Westbrook, maybe it is Donovan, who knows? Mm. So, looking at those are our predictions for the second round, and we'll know, I guess, actually within less than 24 hours, who is going to be joining the Raptors in the second round in the conference semifinals. If I had to throw out a prediction, I think the Raptors can beat the Cavs in 7, and I think they can beat the Pacers in 6.
Yeah, I think the same with that.
So we'll be able to throw out a proper prediction next week, I suppose, although they will have played a couple of games since then, so it may be cheating. But those are the predictions I'll throw out now based on whatever's going to happen within, I guess, 12 to 24 hours' time from when we're recording this. So we will revisit that next week. But I guess that's brought us to the end of another show, Ben.
Yeah. I was wanting to bring this up 2 weeks ago. I've finally received the shirts.
Oh, yes.
So the NLSC shirts are in. I do have a set price for them, which is $36 for memory for the NLSC one. Again, with some of that money, or some of the money from that going actually into funding the LSC, that doesn't include shipping, so shipping is extra. I've still got to make sure I get my PayPal stuff, or make sure it is properly working. Like, I do have one set up, but I'm not 100% sure if it's working. So I'll arrange to do that. I have sizes small to XL, 3XL, sorry. And I do have the sizing charts. I think I may have posted those in the NLSC hub in the forums.
I think so, yeah.
You know, and I've got both inches and centimeters for scale conversion. So, you know, that way you're able to sort of measure it properly, which size suits you best. I don't know if I included my email address on the actual the forum when I posted on it, so I might go back and look at that and update the details on that as well. So I'm looking at, yeah, wanting to try and obviously sell in some of those, and again, you know, it's for the cause of the site, you know, a bit of fun. You know, these shirts were the ones that were voted by the community and that, so I'm hoping that, you know, there is still that interest in them. You know, they turned out really well. I'm getting some better photos of them very soon. It's just been so busy, haven't been able to finish my little photo shoot, you know, so as soon as I get all that done and the web stuff, which is coming up very quickly or coming up very soon, I'll be purchasing the domain. Wanting to do that. What's the date now? I was hoping to get that done by the end of this month, but I probably need a little bit more time to decide, like properly sit down and decide which domain name I want to go with, and then, you know, establish something from there. So it might be another 2 to 4 weeks, depending, you know, making sure I get everything right and have something going. So yeah, it's you know, stuff's coming along with that, and hopefully within the next month everything will be up and running to have where it's a bit easier process to order and send them through. Yeah, so I'm happy with the way they turned out too. That, yeah, the it's like the sleeve one, long sleeve ones. They turned out really well as well. It's a thicker cotton as well, so yeah, should be a really durable shirt in that sense, and a slightly bigger fit than, or yeah, probably a slightly bigger fit than their long sleeve shirts as well. So.
So there is more information in the NLSC Hub, as you said. You can check out that thread that Ben posted under the username Arcane, of course. So, yeah, we will see if we can get some resources set up for ordering and everything, but we will keep you posted. Just trying to think. I don't think there's any other housekeeping issues for the site. Of course, we still have our wishlist threads open for continued discussion in those areas, in the Live 18 and 2K18 sections for Live 19 and 2K19, respectively. And yes, I think that's pretty much it. Just business as usual for us, for the most part, for the moment anyway. But as far as the podcast is concerned, we encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes if you feel so inclined. You can also find us on the Stitcher app for Android and iOS devices. We're also on the the Podcast Addict app. You can find us there. You can also search through our iTunes. If you search through the iTunes feed through the podcast Addict app. You can even search the iTunes feed if you're on an Android device through that app. You might find us easier. It's NLSC Podcast, of course. You can see our logo. You'll see it's us. Or you can keep streaming it on the NLSC itself, as long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying the show. That is the main thing. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter at the NLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. We're on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nb-live.com, or indeed thenlsc.com, whichever way you prefer to get to us, for all your basketball gaming needs. But that is it for episode number 246 of the NLSC podcast. We will be back next week, but until then, I am Andrew.
I'm Arcane.
And we're out like the first round almost is.